to hear from him personally. And I also want to mention, I don't know, he might mention, but it's just in case he doesn't. We are so privileged to be able to have Karen and Dean Mueller with us today. Karen and Dean, would you stand? She has been the attorney for John, and let's give them a hand. And she continues to work to support families that have lost loved ones. And I don't know, if you could have some extra money, the Amos Center could use your support, and they do such a great work. And she has taken on so many responsibilities herself, and I didn't know if she was going to be able to be here today. She's worked 7 days a week. And also, that's a thing that you could pray for, is that she should get some help as well. So God bless you guys. So John, Alan, Sarah, and I just want to, we got to hook this up here. I think James will get it. Seems like I may be forgetting something. If I think of it, I'll let you know at the end. But, so this is kind of dangerous to tell you guys that we're looking for something to do until about 1:30, but I don't want you to go that long. I think the anniversary celebration is at 1:30, so I just want John to be able to take some time here this morning because he's come this way to share with us. So God bless you guys.
Testing. Oh. So John, you've got an hour and a half. Ready? Good morning, church family. I'm going to keep it a little brief. We've got a couple things to say, and then we'll let John speak. There's a lot of really cool things that he's going to share. But this is a real answered prayer. This is something we've been praying for so long, and it's amazing just to have him sitting right here, having him in our home yesterday with his son and daughter, and the recovery's going well. I'm going to just give some really quick background. Not all of you maybe know the story. I'll be really quick about it. So back in September of 21, believe it or not, it's been 2 years already, John went into an Oconomowoc, Wisconsin hospital with shortness of breath. He tested positive for COVID, and his world changed. He went immediately to an ICU room, was completely isolated. Remember, he's coughing and wheezing and hard to think clearly and doesn't know what drugs he's being given, doesn't know a lot of things going on. We had a couple days to talk, and then it was much more difficult after that. It was some texts, and then it kind of went downhill from there. We were asked by John, my wife and I, Sarah, were asked to be a power of attorney for him, which of course doesn't come into effect unless he can't, speak for himself, but we were able to advocate for him until then. We did rapid research, tried to get smart about things. We found that he was on remdesivir for a couple days, got him off of that. We tried to get him onto various vitamins, just simple stuff, vitamin D, vitamin C, etc. Very difficult to get the hospital to do much of anything. If they did, it was a little bit, but it wasn't the 10 times the dose or the 20 times the dose that would have made a difference. Certainly couldn't give him ivermectin because supposedly that was terrible. And so he was getting worse and worse. I decided to sue the hospital system because of that. And that's a whole nother story. But as he's getting worse, he went on a ventilator 2.5 weeks later. And we started giving him ivermectin secretly on our own through his daughter and others, taking matters into our own hands. And that is part of the reason why we believe why he survived. A long story short, he was on a ventilator for over 100 days. He had many infections, collapsed lungs. We were manipulated at times to try to pull the plug. We've heard this story before. This is not unique, unfortunately. He was in and out of 6 hospitals over 10 months, lost 70 pounds, had significant nerve damage to deal with, many other things. And so I'm trying to paint a little bit of a picture because it's unbelievable to look at him now versus where he was. And we eventually took a case to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. Again, I'm not going to get into that right now. But praise God he survived. And the Lord clearly has a great plan and purpose for him to be here. And so you may hear a little bit about that today. I'm just excited that he's here to share, and Sarah's going to add a few more things. Thank you.
We are here in church and sitting right over there where we're sitting this morning, and we get a call in the middle of service, and it was the doctors from the hospital, and they were pretty aggressive in telling us there is no hope. His lungs are scarred, his kidneys, he's on dialysis, they have failed, and they were introducing the idea of us thinking about pulling the plug on him. And we were right there, and we just were like, what? No way. Like, no way we're going to do that. Like, God gets to decide when somebody lives and dies, not us. And you guys, the church was just, we were just broken down at the altar and prayed for him right here. And there's words spoken over us. Just God moved in really powerful ways. And it's amazing 2 years later to be here in this place with him and with his family. And it is the power of prayer. Don't ever underestimate it. I see so many people, like almost everybody in this room, I called upon for prayer. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I need prayer. And the Lord's hand just moved, and he put a fire in us to advocate. And it wasn't us. It was just that power of the Lord. We were on that hospital every single day, and the power of the Lord also moved in his family. Uncle John has been just a father figure in our lives, in all his nieces and nephews' lives, and in a world that doesn't have a lot of strong father figures, he's taught us so much, you know, over the years, and that love, you know, just drove us. And so his family's here today. They have a father. A strong father. I just like to, Courtney and Mitchell, stand up.
Please.
Please recognize them. They're very brave. These two, and then their siblings too, the two sisters, had to walk through the killing fields of the ICU in this hospital every single day to lay hands on their father and to be eyes and ears on the ground for us to then call into the hospital. We worked as a strong team together, and it's just a picture of the church. We need to work together as a strong team. We glorify God in that, and so I just so thankful for God, for the power of prayer, the fire of the Holy Spirit to advocate for life. Every life matters. Uncle John's life matters. So many people did not make it. Too many of our friends and loved ones suffered, and they were imprisoned in these hospitals, denied life-saving treatment, and instead placed on deadly NIH protocols created by our federal government. Put into isolation, deprived of food and water, denied movement, tied to bed sometimes, psychologically abused, experimented on, given treatments expressly forbidden in their living will, while desperate families were denied access to them. These protocols were being used by hospitals throughout this state and in our nation. And it's not okay. It's not okay. I didn't really think that in America this would be going on, but it is. And we have our Uncle John here, and we're very thankful, but there are lots of widows, and it's mostly women, widows, their husbands did not make it, and my heart just weeps for them. Their tables are, you know, have an empty chair, and so I just like to take a moment of silence for the widows. These are definitely crimes against humanity. We know a lot of information. We have a lot of eyewitnesses and testimony to prove in a court of law that this happened. So we have lots of doctors and lots of information. What we lack are brave attorneys to take this to court and to prosecute, like World War II, the Nuremberg trials. Yeah, the doctor trials. There was justice for those doctors and hospital workers following orders. There was justice eventually because they were murdering, and God's law is higher. So we just would ask for your prayers to pray for those brave lawyers. Amos Center is trying to support those lawyers. Karen Mueller is a very brave woman. She works hard. We just covet your prayers for justice to move forward, so that we need justice. We need freedom, patient freedom. Yeah,
absolutely.
So here is Uncle John. I can't wait to hear.
Thank you. I'm like the gal said earlier, I don't care to talk in front of people either. So I did write pretty much everything out today. There's too much to tell you. So I knew I might lose my thoughts. It's very emotional. I do want to echo about Karen Miller and what she's doing. She needs funds. And I can tell you, she's the only one that I know that is fighting this in the world. They're watching what she does around the world, but she needs support now. And I just ask you all, please open up your wallets and give what you can. We all need the help. She's fighting for the life of because I didn't know she was coming, so I didn't pre-write this. But she's writing for that we don't have abortions, to save those children, and for everything from your first breath, or first from conception, all the way to your last breath. And she's fighting for that, and no one else is. So I think I wanted to speak on that. It's extremely important. So, okay, thank you. I also want to thank the Gall family, because I know I probably wouldn't be here if they weren't there helping. They knew so much. They introduced things that helped me getting the ivermectin available and in a form to rub it on me without the doctors knowing. They were threatening my daughter and other family members when they would come in and rub the ivermectin. They didn't know they were rubbing it on us, but they threatened them with thinking that she was putting ivermectin in my IV tube. I mean, how stupid is that? But they didn't realize that they were rubbing it on me. So thank the Gall family for all the stuff. They were calling every day when I was in hospital and making sure everything was getting done, pulling me off of different things, bad experimental drugs. So they were very instrumental in saving my life. Another thing I want to say is I was in hospital for 10 months. My daughter came every day to see me. And and who does that? So why wouldn't you fight to live? My son came every day, but he had an internship, going full-time school and working 25, 30 hours a week. He still came almost 3-4 times a week, and he was over an hour and a half away. So thank you. Thank both of you. So now I'd like to thank all of you, because Alan told me you all were praying for me. So I want to thank you all for praying for me and my family, and helping us. I know God came through your prayers. So I want to thank you guys very much for that. And it helped me to get through some of these challenging times that we're going through. So a little background on my journey. I was a dairy farmer, working 80 plus hours a week. And if any of you are farmers, you know that when it's go time, it's go time. And then I did sell the cows and had a different job, started a business with another guy, and he was another Christian, and we just had a great relationship and still do. But then my wife got cancer, and I had to find a different job, so then I became a gas plant operator at a plant that's 12 minutes from my house, which allowed me to be with my wife almost all the time, other than those hours I was at work. I would work there 55, 60 hours a week, and in 20 years of working, and this was after milking, I never had took a sick day off. I don't get sick. My kids, they have never seen me throw up. They have never seen me miss a day. And I hadn't been to the doctor for 8 years. And I'm telling you this for a reason. I quit going after my doctor told me I was in the top 2% of all his patients. And I heard that for year after year. And I was very healthy. So I wasn't worried when I heard about COVID till it hit me. I thought, this I can beat. I was blessed with a strong body, and I prayed a lot. And then I woke up. I realized, I need to put my glasses on. I was wondering why this is a little fuzzy. I realized I couldn't move. My body was deconditioned from the coma and the constant laying and no weight bearing. I couldn't even use my fingers to press the nurse call button. I couldn't talk. My vocal cords were twisted, and my tongue felt like a numb, oversized brick. I also soon learned that I had a 3-inch bed sore on my butt that almost touched the bone, and every time they moved me, it felt like muscle being sheared from my bone. It was the worst pain I think I've ever had. It was like a knife, and they would, every time they moved me, every how many times a day, it was terrible. Basically, I felt trapped in my body. I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink, as I had a trach in my throat. I was fed through a feed tube to my stomach. I had lost 70 to 90 pounds, and basically I was a bag of bones. As my kids started to explain what had happened to me, I got very angry, ornery, and extremely anxious. I wasn't the nicest to be around. And then I did what I have all my life. I seek the Lord. He answers your prayers. and he calmed my fears. Psalm 34. My kids will tell you they've seen a change in me, and it was all because of my prayers. I was patient with my very slow health improvement, and my anxiety was calmed down. So let me tell you about the 10 months I spent in the hospital. When I first arrived at Aurora, it was very cold. I felt like a piece of meat that falls on the ground, you feed it to your dog. And that's, I said it that way because that's the way I felt. It was terrible there. After spending 4 months at Aurora, where I didn't matter, I was then moved to Lakeview, which is a long-term care facility. It was a very different atmosphere there. I went from cold to very caring and welcoming with open arms. And the therapy began. During my stay, they taught me how to talk, learn to swallow again, and learn to sit in a chair. Throughout this visit, I had two very warm CNAs, one very spiritual speech therapist, and a respiratory therapist who kept pushing me. Then I moved to Ignite, another therapy facility. At this facility, I didn't get too much help, but there was one therapist who pushed me to my limits, to the point that I passed out and they called Code Blue. All I was doing was trying to stand, and my muscles would just shake, but he kept pushing me, and I needed that. Those muscles needed to get going. Trying that hard with him got noticed by a lady who had been arguing with my insurance. She stated that this man is trying and he will get better. They wanted to cut me off. But after a peer meeting between the insurance and ProHealth, they decided to approve me instead of sending me to a nursing facility. I know I'd be laying in there right now if that woman wasn't there and someone sent her, because she pushed hard and she told me she's going to fight for me. And I don't know who she was. She was there for one day, but I know God put her there, and I'm sure the prayers put her there. Upon my arrival, I talked to the head doctor. He was a 76-year-old man who was one day away from being put on the ventilator himself when he had COVID. He was somebody I could really connect with. He lectured me that this was my last dance, as he called it, and I need to give it my all. He said, "It is now or never," and he was real strict about it, and I got it. And I knew I was almost in that home, and I was not going to let that happen. He told me, "You need to eat every ounce of food they put on your plate." He said, "Because if you're going to get better, I was going to need it, and I was going to have to give it my all." And give it my all I did. After 1 week being there, I was able to take 2 steps and fall into the chair. But week 2, I was able to walk 10 steps. By week 3, now I was walking 160 feet. By my final days, I was walking 300 feet and started using the restroom. I also learned how to transfer from the wheelchair into the van. Finally, after 10 months, I was going home. Thank you, Jesus. I will have to say, God put caring, loving people who knew how to get the most out of me in front of me. And I won't lie, it was very hard, and I could have easily given up. After getting home, I had physical therapies in my home. Just trying to get muscles strong enough to make small moves in different directions. It doesn't sound like much, but when you're weak and your bones or your muscles haven't done anything, it's a huge deal to be able to move. I remember the lady, Maple Leaf, we were dancing, and it was just to get my legs to go forward, back, sideways, and I wasn't moving. I wasn't getting anywhere. I was moving a foot. But she was telling me how great that was, and we continued on. I then moved to outpatient. I was having two pulmonary, two occupational, and one physical therapies every week. It was every day that we would go, and they would take me. My family, brothers and sisters would come and take me, and we always got there. I remember the first time being in the therapy. All they did was put me on a bike, and we started to get my legs stronger. So I remember the first time they finally asked if I wanted to go on the treadmill. And I'm like, you think I can do that? And they're like, we'll turn her down. Well, when they turn her down, I'm talking turn her down. It was like this. And I could walk, and I walked maybe 3 minutes at the slowest level it would go. To me, I knew what an accomplishment that was. So after 72 pulmonary visits, I was walking 1.25 miles in 35 to 40 minutes, riding a stationary bike at the eighth level, which is not bad when I couldn't even hardly pedal it at number two when I started. I continued two occupational and one physical therapies till August, 13 months of the therapy since coming home. At this point, my left hand is still not functioning well. I can do this now. It used to be straight and wouldn't move, but I can do this now. It's still somewhat improving. I still have neuropathy in my hands, my feet, and my tongue. And I have constant pain in this hand and my feet, but I can say it's been greatly reduced from a few months ago. Now I would just like to share some stories of interaction that I've had in the last few years with the Lord. I can say that I've prayed all my life to Him since a young kid. My mom instilled that in me. If anything ever bothered me, the best time for me was when I went to bed. I would pray, fall asleep, and I always slept. As anxious I would be about whatever it was gone. And so I want to just tell you some of the things that I have interactions with Him. First of all, when I was in the coma, I remember I was in this black matter. That's all I can explain it. It wasn't a room. It was just black, and it was all fuzzy. And I could tell I was rising. I mean, it wasn't my body rising. I believe it was my soul. And as I went up, I reached this line. When my eyes got above the line, it was the most beautiful colors I had seen ever. But it was just a glimpse. And I went back down. And I believe my soul was going up. I was dying. Am I on my way up? But your prayers and prayers of Christians, and I think that ivermectin was kicking in, and it brought me back. Another time, when I was in the coma, the Lord visited me. And I can tell you right now, it wasn't surreal. It was real. I heard a voice. And it said, "Is that you, Lord?" And I don't know how I even knew, but I just said it. And He answered, "Yes." He told me, He said, "You know, you have gone through a lot of suffering as a human." But I didn't know what He was talking about, what He meant, because I didn't know I was going through this. And I said, "Well, that's nothing compared to you going on the cross." And then he told me he was very angry about the sexual immorality that's in this world. And we talked about some other things. And those things I don't remember well. But I do remember, I asked him if a mortal can ask an immortal a question. And he laughed and said, sure. So I asked him, am I going to heaven? And he said, yes. Yes, you are. And boy, I can tell you what a calming feeling that was. It was amazing. Then I want to tell the story of 2 days after burying my wife who had cancer. This is about 3 years ago. She had been buried, and all of us, all seven of us, were at home. And I was kind of moping around in the recliner and not doing much. And I'm a big archery hunter. And they said, you need to get out there. You need to get out there and see if you can get something. I said, I'm not going out, like, hunting. And the four of them just nagged me and found, like, whatever. I got up and I went out. And I have to walk a ways to get back to the woods. So I'm walking through my cornfields, and I get about halfway, and I don't know why, but I said, Lord, is she in heaven? I stopped in my tracks and said, I want to know today. I want to know if she's in heaven. And I said, I don't want this to be a coincidence. I don't want just what I'm going to ask you to do never happens. And any of you hunters will know this. It was in the afternoon, probably about 3 o'clock. I said, I'm going to get in that tree stand. I'm going to sit down, and I want a buck to come out. I'm going to shoot it. It's going to go down. I'm going to call. We're going to go home, and I'm going to be done. And I will know she's in heaven, because that don't happen. Not immediately. And then, oh, my God, I realized I was putting the Lord to the test. And I backtracked. I'm like, whoa, what am I doing here? I remember feeling really bad. So I apologized to him. And I said, just forget all that. We don't worry about that. It's fine. So I go and walk the rest of the way. I climb up the stand. I sit down, pull up my bow, as all you guys would know would do. I get the bow, and I put my arrow in, got it all set, and I sit down. And after I'm sitting down, I hear this noise. It's behind me. And I'm sitting at the edge, kind of the woods in the cornfield. And I know what a squirrel sounds like. You guys that hunt know the difference between a squirrel and a gopher and how, you know, they run around to dance. You just know all the different sounds. This wasn't that. So I'm slowly turning around. And there's two bucks standing in the cornfield. And I'm telling you, I got shivers. And I'm like, what the heck? And I turn around and I'm looking, and in the first, between the first and second row, there was a four-point buck. But in the second and third row, there was a bigger, quite a bit bigger, eight-point buck. And they were standing parallel right next to each other. And I had a shot, and I said to the Lord, I can't shoot that little one. The big one has had a longer life. I really don't want to do that. And not after I just said it, the little buck moved forward and got out of the way. So I'm looking at the big buck, and there's three rows of corn, and I'm like, it's going to deflect the arrow. Lord, this was great and everything, but I can't do this ethically. And the buck moved ahead and stopped. And if any of you know cornfields, when you plant, you plant at 6.5, 7 inches, depending on your population, there's always space, and it was a perfect space, and I could see right to the sweet spot of the deer. And I remember my hair stood up, my goosebumps came. I knew this was the Lord. This stuff don't happen. So I went, and I said, I guess it's up to me now, huh? I remember saying that to him. So I went, took the shot, double lung the deer, and the deer goes and runs 20 yards, and we have a trail for our ATVs that wraps around, and I could see him fall down, and because it was a double lung, he died real quick. And probably only a few minutes later, he expired. So I got on the phone, and these guys know this story well. I went and called, and I called Courtney. She always answers her phone, and the other ones, it gets less. It's just the way kids are. Courtney always answers, so she's my go-to when I need something. And I called her, and she don't answer. Great, she don't answer. Because I didn't want to walk all the way back. It's a 10, 15-minute walk. So I call Mitchell. He answers most time, but you know he's a little lack there too. And he don't answer. And then it's Leah. Leah's less, and she answers about a quarter of the time, maybe. And she don't answer. And then I got Sam. And Sam never answers the phone. And they'll all know. You can text her, and she'll get back to you 2 days later if she gets back. That's Samantha. She answers the phone. And I tell her, tell Courtney to get the ATV and pick me up. I do not want to be out here. I was very adamant with her. I didn't mention a deer, nothing. I said, I just want to go home. I told you guys, and I made it convincing. I don't want to be out here. And she's like, okay, I'll tell her. So Courtney comes driving out, and she stops, and I didn't go down around that corner. And I'm walking out, and she says, Dad, where's the deer? And I said, there is no deer. And she said, no, Dad, where's the deer? And I said, Courtney, there is no deer. She said, well, Sam said there's a deer. It's a sign from God. And let me tell you, at that moment, I knew my wife was in heaven. There's no coincidence to that. And I've asked Sam 2 months ago again, how did you know that? And she said, I don't know. It just came to me that he got one. It's from God. And she told them. And so I'm just telling you this because to me it was amazing and the connection was unbelievable. Knowing my wife was in heaven, what a great feeling. After watching her 18 months and have cancer destroy her body, I just knew it had nothing over her soul. And then there's one more thing I would like to share, and that is about planting seeds in people's minds. I think we all need to do that. I remember when Alan and Sarah, and they remember this too, stayed at our home for a weekend. I don't remember, 15, 20 years ago. And we talked a lot about the Lord, among other things. And my wife told Sarah something that has stuck with her and has sparked a stronger fire in her quest for the Lord. You just never know when someone's mind and heart can be changed when you witness to the Lord. You need to ask her about that sometime. I won't go into it. But what a blessing that it did. What a wonderful family. I'm proud to say they're my family. Their kids are wonderful. Just very lucky. Very lucky to have them in my life. All those moments and months that I was in the hospital, I would ask every nurse if they knew the Lord and tell them a little bit about it. I was just hoping to ignite a spark, and we would talk. I will probably never know about the nurses, but I can tell you about a psychiatrist that I was scheduled every Thursday at 1 o'clock to talk to for an hour for my 5 last weeks in the hospital. I didn't want it. She knows I didn't want it, but I had to do it. It was part of their, probably part of what, maybe it was the protocol, I don't know. I had to do this with this woman. And we would talk, and she every day would say, we'll talk about anything you want to. okay, anything, because she knew I didn't want to be there with her. I wasn't going anywhere because I was laying there, but she knew I didn't really want to be there. And so we talked about the spiritual world, mainly Jesus Christ and God. And then she told me she was an atheist. And she told me there was no God and there was no proof of him. And so I started telling her my stories. And by week three, she said, you know, you're really passionate about this, aren't you? It's the third day we're talking about this. But she wouldn't tell me no because she knew I'd tell her there was the door. So we would, I could tell that she was starting to show interest. Then I told her, I said, if the Bible is wrong, we would get put in a box, and that would be it. So I said, if you're right, you know, that's what's going to happen. I said, but if you're wrong, I will go to heaven, and you'll be thrown into the fire of hell. You'll have darkness and gnashing your teeth. I told her, you know, they've been trying to get rid of the Bible forever. If it wasn't truly, if it wasn't true, why are they trying to get rid of a belief that the people who follow it don't hurt anyone? Why is that so important? Why are they doing this? I still don't know why she allowed me to keep discussing this, but I do know on her final visit, she said, I still don't believe, but I have to admit, she said, you're getting me to think about it now. And my point with all this is, we must witness to people we get to talk with, be it on the street or like me just laying in a bed. I hope that seed was planted. And you all have your way of doing it, and there's no right way. It's your way, and you know what you believe, and you need to tell people and help them understand, plant the seed. You can't do anything more than make that spark. And if it gets sparked, great. If it doesn't, you tried. And the Lord wishes us to do that. So I just... I want to thank Al, Sarah, for hosting us this weekend. It's been great. It really has been. Also, for inviting us to your church service. And I'd like to thank you guys again for your prayers. They really helped, and they are very appreciated. I will ask that you guys continue. I'm trying to get a full recovery. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I've come a long way. I would like to someday get up in my tractor and start doing field work again. Hopefully I can't get up there, and I can't really handle that, doing all those things like that yet, but that's a goal that I have, and if you guys could keep praying for me, I know that they've helped, and I know they're going to continue to help. So with that, I'm just going to say thank you guys for having me. It's been a pleasure. God bless us all. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Wow, it's been a full day. We've cut a lot of stuff in this today, and so grateful for your attention. And don't forget, Center Shot meeting up here on this side. Anybody who want to be involved in it, there's different things that you can do. You don't have to be an expert with the bow. There are other things that you can do to help out as well. So if you could meet over here, that would be great. Just mention, I'm not taking an offering today, but if you want to give to like the Amos Center or John, even for his financial bills, and you want a giving credit, you could always give to the church, and we'll make sure that those funds would go to them and be a blessing to them as well.
I don't know what the hospital bills cost. I don't even want to find out what a hospital bill like that would be. So God bless you. You're dismissed.